Off the Ball Rugby.
Conan's going to come in and there's a very good chance now starting for the Lions. Yes, he's an absolute talisman. He's been the most in-form number 8 for a good while now in the world.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Off the Ball app is getting a new look and will now be called the Go Loud app. You don't need to download it again. If you want to listen to 3 free podcasts per month or become a member and don't already have the app, search for Go Loud in your app store now.
Off the Ball.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Right, it is time to preview the cross-channel football this weekend. Everybody is on the beach except for Kathleen McNamee and I. Kathleen, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Delighted to be here.
Yeah, our Victor, who was crowned last week, is just not here.
No, he's on a plane somewhere. He's doing a Liverpool on it. He's decided to take his holidays and go off and celebrate. Although, to be fair to Mick, he did actually wait till the end of, well, nearly the end of the competition, unlike Liverpool, who went a little bit early, you have to argue.
Yeah, true. His beloved Villa have a big, big game this weekend, so hopefully they're not on the beach either. But Mick is in an unassailable position at the top of the table. And yeah, congratulations, Mick. I hope you enjoy the money. What a sad little life. Right, let's have a look at how things look in the Who You Got table over the last little while. So this was just last week specifically. Should say match the 37? Oh, sorry, we only do 34 weeks because of midweeks. Match day 34, correct. Mick even kills the fields last week. He topped match day 34 on his own with 7 points. He got 2 exact scores last week, which is pretty remarkable. Kathleen, you managed to get a correct score and clock up an impressive 4 points. Sure, I got 5. What was your correct score? Do you remember?
I'm actually trying to think about it. You go through the rest of them and I'll remember it.
Then we can have a look at the overall table as a result of that move. So Mick obviously with a 7 points puts him on 104 points. And look at that, a little crown on Mick's name. So Mick on 104 points. In second place at the moment is Will on 89 points, so unassailable at the top. At the bottom and in the relegation spots, I think we're all safe. I'm 4th from bottom, Kathleen, you're 3rd from bottom, Jared 2nd from bottom, but he's 7 points clear of Cullum, who's the basement dweller on 74
points. I'm also 3rd from bottom, having missed a week because it was not realised that I was away, so I got no points 2 weeks ago.
Right.
So I just want to put that little asterisk there, because normally if you're away, you either get a proxy or else you get a text in to say, what are your picks?
You would have got 8 points otherwise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It would have been all correct
scores.
You'd
be in second spot, actually, behind Mick, so amazing how congested it is. It's like the race for Champions League, really. Everybody who's not making this table. So we will be...
100-point season.
Incredible, really. I don't know, this is my first time ever playing this game, so I'm not sure the historical context of that, but it seems impressive.
Cullum didn't do it last year. It definitely wasn't 100-point season.
Did he not?
No,
okay.
And it was a lot tighter at the top.
There's also a small trophy somewhere, so I don't know. Does Cullum need to return that to the studio so we can give that to Mick? And Mick will also be taking the winnings from the charity bet. And I could just end the sentence right there and people would be like, what the hell? No, he's going to take the winnings from the charity bet and then he will choose which charity.
That's why he's actually on the flight right now.
We have paid for a 5-star trip for Mick to the Seychelles over the course of these next few days. Right, let's begin by looking ahead to the weekend. And Manchester United versus Aston Villa is the first game we want to look at because this is our charity bet. But let's have a look first of all at what we're predicting this weekend. It's a clean sweep. Aston Villa all round. And yeah, biggest score there, Shane, 4-0.
Cullum's gone for a bit of a screamer of a game, 3-4.
Yeah, Mick has gone for something similar, 3-2 to Aston Villa. Obviously, Aston Villa don't have a great record at Manchester United, but all those records with regards to Manchester United historically are out the window in recent seasons. So I wouldn't be awfully surprised if we're all correct that Aston Villa are going to get the win. They've certainly got a lot more to play for, but as we've known this season, Manchester United can show up at the most weird of times. Let's bring in Dave Kellner of William Hill to chat about this. Dave, a very good afternoon to you. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
All good. Just first of all, on that motivation piece, there's no chance that Manchester United just out of nowhere produce something to stop Aston Villa's charge towards the Champions League, is there?
I doubt it. If you, so anyone that saw them play on Wednesday night would suggest that they've not got the players capable of doing that. Rasmus Højlund's the one that's been pilloried in the press as a consequence of what happened on Wednesday night. Maybe a little bit of a scapegoat, but he looks like an actor playing the character of Erling Haaland, really, doesn't he, Højlund? He doesn't really look like a Premier League footballer. And it's amazing to think, I know we said something similar on last week's podcast, but Aston Villa are odds on to win a game at Old Trafford in the Premier League this weekend. And it's correct once again, because Villa have something to play for. They've got a much better squad. They've got a better manager. They've got a better setup. They've got, well, everything's better at Villa. They're 7-10 to win this game. The draw 3-1, Manchester United in the betting at 16-5. I'd say it's incredibly unlikely Manchester United pull off a performance that they've not looked capable of doing.
Yeah. The only thing is that Manchester United have, during this last decade of pain, pulled out insane performances from nowhere when we don't expect it. But the thing with the Amorim era is that even that has dried up. Even the unexpected performance that we've kind of had no basis for just hasn't happened. They just haven't had performances, full stop. And then you throw into the mix the Aston Villa emphasis on trying to get all 3 points this weekend. They really need to win. And this is what we're looking at this weekend, Dave, in terms of our charity bet. It's Aston Villa to win over 2.5 goals and Morgan Rodgers to score one of those goals.
That's available at 5-1. It is an impact sub game with William Hill, and you get a 25% winnings boost on your bet builder. Obviously, you guys have come up with a bet builder there as well, and it does qualify for that 25% winnings boost, so we'll give you that. Aston Villa to win over 2.5 match goals and Morgan Rodgers to score in the game, 4-1, but we'll boost that to 5-1 for that charity bet.
Okay, very good. What else are we looking at this weekend, Dave?
Yeah, there's plenty going on. We've got an Acca bet and get with William Hill as well for the games on Sunday in the Premier League. Obviously, final day of the Premier League season. So if you have a bet on an Acca with four or more selections, we'll give you a free bet this weekend. You can access that on the sportsbook and on the app as well. There looks to be a reasonably obvious accumulator in the Premier League this weekend, with teams that need to win against teams that are proverbially already on their summer holidays. Manchester City to beat Fulham, Crystal Palace to beat Liverpool, Aston Villa to beat Manchester United, and Newcastle to beat Everton looks to be the way that I would play it personally. I think that's a decent enough accumulator. City are 6-10 to win at Fulham. Liverpool to get that final day win at home. There's a bit of incentive there for Liverpool, I think, with that being their final home league game, 2-5. Villa we've spoken about at 7-10, and Newcastle are 1-3 to beat Everton and need to do so. That pays just over 4-1 with William Hill, and obviously qualifies for that free Acca as well.
Very good. So just remind us again of the odds for the charity bet.
The charity bet's available at 5-1, which I think is a really fair price, because if you're looking at that game in particular, you've got to be focused on Morgan Rodgers. He's had such a wonderful end to the season. I'd also be looking at the assist market with Rodgers as well. He's got more assists than any Villa player this season, and he's got one in back-to-back Premier League games against Bournemouth and Spurs. So if you're looking to go down that avenue, Rodgers looks good for an assist this weekend as well.
Very good. Dave, great stuff as always. Thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you.
Cheers. That's Dave Kellner of William Hill on the line.
This week on Diverted.
I mean, I woke up at like 11:30. I cracked a cold one with the boys. We had some buffalo chicken dip this afternoon.
It's the only way to do it. It's the only way to do it. It's the only way to do it in Gainesville, baby.
Yeah.
We are in the United States. We're talking college football, Hialeah in Miami, and we're talking pillow fighting.
It's still combat sports. The transition from bare knuckle to pillow fight is good, because I'm also a Tai Chi instructor, so you know you got to go from hard to soft.
Diverted. Coming every Tuesday to your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts.
On this Manchester United-Aston Villa game, Kathleen, just to put a bit of meat on the bone of what's actually happening here, the Aston Villa's terrible record at Old Trafford. So in 29 appearances, they've only won there twice. So 5 draws, and the rest are defeats. They've kept just 4 clean sheets at Old Trafford, scored 18 goals while conceding 59. Now again, this all comes couched in the history of Manchester United, and I think we have to start calling it that, the history of Manchester United, not the present or anywhere near the modern version of Manchester United. Unai Emery, in his first game in charge of Manchester United, was a 3-1 home victory against the Cristiano Ronaldo captained Manchester United. But in the four league meetings since then, Villa have lost three times. While in the other match, it was a goalless draw earlier this season, which I don't think too many people other than United and Villa fans will actually remember. Ten Hag was sacked 3 weeks later. I got that from The Athletic earlier on, who did like a rundown of Villa's awful experiences at Old Trafford. That doesn't really matter though this weekend, does it?
I don't think so. I think with this United team, you do have to just throw everything out the window in terms of what we know or what we think we know of this team and the club in general. You know, you even have the stuff with Garnacho this week. How much is that going to be playing on the minds of the team? And like from some of the reports in the papers this morning, the bosses, the big bosses at United are all very much still on Amorim's side, but there's some of the senior players there who aren't all that sure. So there's just so much uncertainty, and I don't know what Amorim has. Like, what good faith is there in that team that he can tap into and say, like, look, it's been an awful week. It was a terrible performance. I maybe didn't make the right decisions at times. Some of the antics on the field and off the field wasn't great, but we need to pull together now as a club and get a result out of this game to kind of end on some sort of positive note. I just don't know, does he have that with this group of players, and especially with the way he has talked about them publicly and talked about the team publicly. I did see earlier that he has been, or is being slated to be given on 100 million for the summer in terms of spending, but that's not a lot of money in modern football when you look at the restructuring that needs to happen in that squad. So yeah, I would be pessimistic going into this match about their chances.
The Garnacho thing is extraordinary. Really, and maybe not something we should be overly surprised with.
Well, he's done it before with Ten Hag when I think it was a post on X at the time that was criticising Ten Hag and he liked it or something.
Yes. And for whatever reason, I'm not sure, was there maybe a new manager bounce with regards to his own mood and his own behaviour? But to speak out like that after a European final, especially when your team has lost, I don't know, that's one of those that in the sphere of Amorim's behaviour, that is an offence that just gets you transfer listed immediately. Now, the problem is that Garnacho is contracted until 2028. It would be brilliant if they could sell him and manage to claw back some of the money, or not claw back, but get the earnings on whatever the next 3 years of his contract are going to be and get what he's worth as a young player. Maybe not a player who's going to become world class, but as a young player who has shown glittering moments, but nothing consistent. I just don't see how an offer comes in for Garnacho that's going to satisfy what they think he's worth. Do you potentially send him out on loan? Or I'm not sure what you do, but like Amorim has done this with Marcus Rashford most famously, and even Ten Hag before him. It was quite unusual that Ten Hag maybe stood for this behaviour, and I'm not sure if that was the case behind closed doors. I suspect it wasn't, but there's been a bit of leeway with Garnacho.
Yeah, and I suppose as well, from the Ten Hag perspective, it's easier to kind of explain away a like on a post. You know, it could very easily be, oh, it was in my pocket.
And he apologised for it, allegedly. Yeah. Well, Ten Hag came out and said that he did.
Whereas
you know,
this feels a lot more grievous. And also, you know, you talk about maybe potentially getting some of the money back there or getting someone in or bringing them a transfer. It's not really a good look when two managers in a row, you've gone on social media and lambasted. Well, I suppose Ten Hag wasn't really lambasted, but like this one very much was.
I was watching it earlier on, actually. Did it in the mix zone in Spanish with a load of journalists from, I don't know, from Argentina, from Spain or whatever the case was. And I don't know, there's something quite deliberate. Like we saw it with Mo Salah this year. When you're speaking in the mixed zone, you are making a decision to put a message out there.
Yeah.
This was not Garnacho caught in the hop or, as you say, accidentally liked a tweet in my pocket. This was him deliberately saying, I'm going to go out there and send a message through my words to the world. And he goes out and speaks in his first language to a bunch of collected journalists. I don't know, like I think...
It's also making the point as well that he thought he could make a material difference to the game and how the game went, and that if he had been on...
He did look okay. He made a bit of a difference.
He did make a difference when he came on, I know. But just in terms of, I don't know, like there's just there's an inherent confidence there in him that you would think that something that Amorim would want to tap into a little bit or use in a team that is clearly bereft yeah. of confidence and bereft of a lot of other things, arguably, as well at the moment. But, you know, how do you harness a player like that that has that sort of fire?
You got to start him.
For positivity rather than he feels like he needs to go to the mixed zone, as you say, after a game and
yeah.
say everything that he did. And like his brother was saying stuff on social media too and he was interacting with that. So, yeah.
I don't want to be too harsh on a guy who's 20 years old and I'm sure he's got a bit of growing up to do, but that just smacks of, I don't know, I can just see this being clipped, but like just a lack of professionalism or a lack of a winning mentality that you don't see in a European Cup final, that you can play a role here. You've seen Mason Mount come into the team the last time and do brilliantly well. For the record, like I said to Keith Tracy here on the night, will Amorim regret not starting Garnacho? And from what I saw, he probably should have started Garnacho, but that does in no way excuse the behaviour of the player. Yeah. And look, I'm sure there are plenty of Manchester United fans out there who think that maybe you should pick Garnacho versus Amorim if it's that much of a black and white situation here, because Garnacho has maybe a big future.
What does Amorim do for this weekend?
I don't think he starts him. I don't think he starts him. It's quite difficult to know what team he is going to go with. But I think that if Garnacho does get the start, that is brushing what he said under the carpet or ignoring it or accepting it. Mm. And I just think that in what we know about Amorim is that he is a tough disciplinarian. Ten Hag was a tough disciplinarian. Look how well that worked out for him. But I just don't see him standing for what Garnacho said.
But considering,
it just questions his authority completely.
But considering, I suppose, what did happen in the final when he did come on, you know, and how desperate United are at this stage for a result.
Yeah, maybe.
Like,
but
is there space there for
him
to come out after the game and be like, we had a good conversation, he apologised, water under the bridge.
Potentially bury the hatchet before the summer and all that.
And also, even if they do want to get rid of him, you kind of need to do something to make
it. He's got to put in an all-time performance in this one last game that he has this season. So we are all on the Aston Villa side of things for this week. Only the other thing just to mention here is that over the past six games, Villa only trail Manchester City in the Premier League form table. So they're on fire at the moment in terms of their last six. Manchester United, as we know, are not on fire. And I think that's why we've all gone for an Aston Villa win at Old Trafford this weekend. Let's actually skip on to the Champions League final. Tomorrow we'll come back to the Premier League at the end. So this is Arsenal versus Barcelona. I know you were talking to Emma Byrne this morning. We had Vicky Lasada on the show during the week as well. The power couple that is. I know they probably both have to maybe make a case for Arsenal, and I can totally understand that. To a large part, their heart is at Arsenal. I find it very, very difficult to make any sort of reasonable case that they're going to win this game.
I have been truly baffled by some of the commentary around this game. And even during the week, I was at Carla Ward's squad announcement for the Nations League games that are coming up next week. And she was like, yeah, no, like once Arsenal saw past Real Madrid, I really thought they could do something against Barcelona. And I just don't know where people are getting this from. Now, to be fair to Emma, because obviously over the last couple of years, the conversation from an English perspective is, can Chelsea do it? Because Chelsea have absolutely dominated in England. It's always been an assumption that if there was a team that would potentially win the Champions League, it would be them. But Emma Byrne has consistently said, and when she was on Koi Gig and even little bits that she's done since she stopped being on the podcast, that she thought Arsenal were going to be the more likely ones to get to a Champions League final and win. She's like, I think if they can get there, they can do that. And she's been saying that for about 3 years now, 3-4 years. So I can understand her confidence a little bit because she has actually been saying it, but I don't know where it's coming from everyone else. I just think you look at that Barcelona team and like the midfield in particular, it's just so dangerous.
The best midfield to have ever played the game.
I think so. Yeah. But then you do look and they're not a midfield that's used to being defensive. You know, they're very forward playing. They like to attack. They don't spend a whole lot of time at the back, especially in the league. They've had to do it like a little bit more in the Champions League. So I think the only way I can see Arsenal getting something out of that game is if they can frustrate Barcelona and put them on that
That's not really Arsenal's style though, is it?
No, it's not. So it's going to be, like, I think what Arsenal need to do going into this game is not do what Chelsea did. Chelsea tried to play them player to player, and that just did not work. They can't do that. Barcelona are absolute queens at doing that. And Chelsea, it's not Chelsea's style of play. It's not their game.
Okay.
So Arsenal, I suppose this week, very much need to knock it in their own heads, play the game they want to play, and force that out of Barcelona. I think Mariona is going to be a massive part of that, because obviously she's played with the Barcelona team. She's played with the Spanish players, which is basically the core of that team. And I think she will be someone that they will be conscious of, and, you know, voted Arsenal's best player this year. So she hopefully will be able to provide some sort of insight to the team. I think if this was a two-legged tie, I would 100% have not a single doubt that Barcelona would do it, because it's a once-off. And because of the way that Arsenal dominated Lyon in particular, I'm like, there is a grain of hope there, but I have also gone for a 3-1 Barcelona win. So
yeah. Well, let's have a look at what we're predicting this weekend. Everybody's going for Barcelona, which is no surprise there. 4-2 is what Mick is saying. That's, and Colm's going for the same scoreline as well. I'm going for a 3-1. You're going for a 3-1 as well, Kathleen. So everybody there, if I'm not mistaken, is going for a 2-goal win at least for Barcelona. Arsenal are 9-1. To win this game. That's the same price that Southampton are to beat Arsenal in the Premier League this weekend. Like, that is, the gap between Arsenal and Barcelona is the same as the gap between Southampton and Arsenal in men's football, is what the markets are telling us. That is how big of an outsider they are. But is that fair? Like, that's they're not that much of an outsider, are they? Like,
no.
Are they being overpriced a little bit?
It's really hard because they've been so inconsistent this season. You know, you look at the last couple of weeks, and like particularly that last game against Manchester United, like they were home and dry and they just let United back into it. They've been really bad at lapses of concentration at inopportune times. And that's the thing that would concern me about this weekend, because you need to be firing on all cylinders for the full 90 minutes plus whatever injury time there is against this Barcelona team. You give them an inch and they will 100% take a mile. So I think it's, how are they mentally prepping going into this week? Because realistically, the side is what it is. On paper, yes, Barcelona have a better team, but I do think Arsenal have some areas that they can attack in, and they can frustrate Barcelona in. But mentally, what are they doing this week to make sure that they are in that right space? And it was interesting, you know, I was talking to Emma Byrne, as you were saying this morning, and specifically asking her, you know, what are you saying to Katie McCabe this week? Because Emma's won it. She's been there. Fair enough, the game was a very different place at that stage. And they did actually, it was a two-legged final when she did it.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. So their goal was just to get back to Boreham Wood, where the women play, with results that they could get through. And that's what they did at the time. And she was like, you just have to soak in the moment. You know, don't let the nerves get you. Don't be thinking about the Nations League games that are coming up that are incredibly important. I mean, what a 2 weeks McCabe has ahead of her. And also just concentrate, just be that mentality monster and concentrate on the next 5 minutes in front of you, not the next 2 days or whatever it is.
Looking back at the games that Arsenal have lost over the past little while, like Brighton 4-2, Aston Villa 5-2, who else have they lost to? Got to scroll back a bit more before their last defeat. Before that, okay, Manchester City in the Women's League Cup semi-final. That was a defeat on the day, Chelsea beating them, which kind of disproves my point. But what I was going to say is, if you look at those last two defeats in particular, granted the WSL was over and they're only focusing on this, is there a case that Arsenal have just not been on it mentally all season, that when it comes up against a quote-unquote weaker team, and it's not a Chelsea or a Manchester City, this team underperforms? And is that the thing you can cling to for tomorrow? Because concentration is not going to be an issue tomorrow. This is the biggest game of a lot of these players' club careers, that actually we've seen an undervalued and underperforming version of Arsenal all season. And at least there will be something closely resembling their 100% tomorrow.
That's what I'm hoping. Okay. But I do think the inconsistency of the kind of final few games of the WSL, like, yes, okay, you say there was nothing to play for, but there was also still Champions League football for next year.
True.
So that was important, you know, because you had United in there and you had City as well on their heels. So they did still have to perform, and they didn't. They managed to do enough in that they still got the second place, especially with that big win against United at the very last day of the season. But I think for this Arsenal team, like, yes, they can get themselves up for the big games. I just wish they were going into it on a bit of a better platform.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go back to the Premier League. No confidence really so far in Manchester United or in the Arsenal women's team. So I think Nottingham Forest...
It's very depressing for our final episode of the season.
Nottingham Forest versus Chelsea, I think, is where we should go next. So I'm really surprised by the predictions here. So I've gone for a Forest win, Jer's gone for a Forest win, and Nathan's gone for a Forest win. I'm not necessarily saying that I'm going to be right here, but I just thought that it was pretty... It was going to be one or the other, Forest or Chelsea. I'm so surprised that so many people have said a draw. I'm not sure a draw is good for either team tomorrow. It could be. It could be okay for Chelsea, I guess, but...
Chelsea it could be okay for.
I'm not sure it will be, though. Like, we've all predicted Aston Villa to win. Mm. So let's just work our logic out here. Let's look at the Premier League table. So Aston Villa, given that we've all predicted them, are going to be on 69 points, is what we're saying. Chelsea are currently on 66 points. So they'll go up to 67 with a draw. They would then need Newcastle to get beaten by Everton, and spoiler alert, we're all going to predict Newcastle as well, so they're going to be on 69 points as well. So Chelsea need to win this game. Chelsea are favourites for this game, I believe, even though they're away from home, and Nottingham Forest are in 65, they're currently in 7th position. They absolutely need to win this game, so a draw is the thing that I least expect to happen here, but it's what the majority of our team is saying. So explain that, Kathleen.
Well, is that not kind of part of the reason in that both teams really do need a win, but also both teams have proven in recent weeks that when the crunch comes, they're not maybe up for it? Like, I think Chelsea, if you look at that Newcastle game, I think they're going to have similar struggles in that the atmosphere is going to be absolutely electric at the weekend. Everyone is going to be up for this game. We've seen them falter a little bit. Forest... I mean, I kind of wanted to go for a Forest win just because I said that they were going to make European spots. I actually think I left Chelsea out of it a couple of weeks ago whenever we were talking about it. But I think my thing is, I don't know which of these two sides has the nerve. And that's why I've gone for the draw, because I think they'll both be up for it. I think they'll both score.
Both bottle it.
And I think they'll both bottle it.
Two teams bottling it into one game, it would be extraordinary.
I won't lie, I'm basing this purely on vibes rather than any sort of like technical analysis of these two teams, but just from having watched them, I don't know who is the team in there that has the mentality that they can do. I mean, arguably Forest have absolutely nothing to lose and can just go out and go for it. Chelsea, it's maybe a bit of a bigger deal if they don't, with the expectation that's on the team, and that would be the fourth year without Champions League.
Yeah, I think it'd be their longest stint in a long, long time without it if they don't manage to get in.
And it's funny because they obviously have the Conference League final against Betis on Wednesday, but like, no one's thinking about that. No one's talking about that.
It's so immaterial, isn't it? Like, it'd be nice, I guess, for Maresca to get a trophy, but that's really about it. They're not going to be... Nicholas Jackson is not going to be available for them this weekend. You've got Fofana, obviously, who's injured. But other than that, they've got a pretty full choice squad from which to choose. It's hard to know who's better placed for success come August. Like, what we've witnessed this season has been really unusual from both teams. Like, Nottingham Forest with the greatest jump we've ever seen in Premier League history. I think their jump in points from season to season is even bigger than Leicester City's was when they went from relegation trouble to winning the Premier League. I'm open to correction on that, but it's certainly up there with that Leicester City points jump. And then Chelsea, coming up to Christmas, we were talking about them, you know, could they potentially compete with Liverpool and Arsenal for the Premier League title?
And they then just fell away.
Fizzled out spectacularly. In fact, fizzling out is too soft a term to use. So, I mean, I'm really unsure about what actually happens next season. In a weird way, I think Forest are probably better placed to push on. And even if they're playing Europa League football, I think that could be a really good place for them to go and go deep into that competition, given the quality of fare that we saw in the final this season and no teams jumping down from the Champions League. Whereas Chelsea, I could see them qualifying for the Champions League and then next season just being a little bit of a mess where they have all these fixtures. And Amorim keeps talking about it for Manchester United, where he's actually okay with the fact that there'd be no European football for Manchester United next season, where he's got time at a training ground. I get the sense that Chelsea kind of need something similar. Even though Maresca's been there and he had a pre-season and he's been in there much longer than Amorim, I still get the feeling that they're trying to figure this out. And you don't know, you never know what Chelsea are going to do in a transfer window. So who knows what their squad is going to look like. And then they've got summer football this year as well. So I don't know. It's
like with Chelsea, I think the thing is, because of the way that squad was assembled when Boehly and that whole administration came in, it was a bit chaotic and it was a lot of separate elements. And I think that's why now we're still not really seeing a consistent team that you think is going to be able to go on a consistent run or could be reliable enough to be able to cope with European football and a Premier League run and, you know, keep up in that top six or whatever it is that they're, obviously they're aiming for the top of the table, but like top six is probably more realistic for where they are at the moment. And I think, you know, I suppose you talk about Amorim and United, he probably has the same problem. It's just that the caliber of players in Chelsea that were brought in are slightly better and there's slightly better feeling around the place than there is at United at the moment. So yeah, I would say I wouldn't be surprised if Riquelme was happy enough with not having European football and just being able to concentrate on like actually developing and building a squad that he can trust, that has a bit of depth and also that has a reliability on each other, never mind even on the pitch itself.
Now, the one thing I should say, like, is that Chelsea have basically been in this situation all year long. They've basically had no midweek football. They didn't even register Cole Palmer for their Conference League table situation. So they have, by and large, had rested players. Their best players had been rested going into the weekends, and they have played second string teams, or at least first team A, for a lot of their European fixtures this season. So that hasn't been the excuse for a lot of it. And I know they've strengthened their squad when they got into the knockouts, but like they're looking at a squad where, if you judge it by contract length, they're not stuck with these players, but they know what their squad should be for the next few years anyway. Like obviously
next
10 years. Yeah. Like we talk about 2028 being a long contract for Garnacho. Like, I mean, I think you could probably have close to a dozen to two dozen players who've got longer contracts than that at Chelsea Football Club. So it's a pretty remarkable situation. Newcastle versus Everton is where we're going to finish up today. So this is a rogue call from Cullum. Cullum's actually going for a draw here, a nil-all draw. Nathan's going for a 6-0 Newcastle. And I think we're all going pretty heavy wins. I'm going 4-0. Kathleen, you're going 2-1. You're going scratchy enough. Shane and Will agree with you. Nathan's going 3-1. I think Cullum's not here to speak for himself, but I think the angle on a draw here is Jordan Pickford doing it for his former club Sunderland and stopping Newcastle qualifying for the Champions League, pulling out an all-time great performance.
It would be a very Pickford move to make, to be fair. Like, I actually would not be surprised if he single-handedly kept every single ball out of the net and had one of the greatest games of his career, because that, I just feel like he's that sort of person. He loves the showmanship, he loves the loyalties that he has, he loves those big performance moments, even though it's going to make zero difference to Everton in their season. The fact that he'll be able to go home and be a hero from that side of things, I think that's the sort of thing that would motivate him.
Yeah, like they've got,
and I think Moyes would play into that massively as well all week.
Yeah, I think so. It's just the rest of the players then, like the 10 outfield players that Pickford has to also say, listen, I know we had our big moment last week, we sent off Goodison in great style, we got our win, now we've got to do one more on a game that doesn't really matter whatsoever. It also depends on what the firepower is against Jordan Pickford this weekend. Isak has made good progress, to quote Eddie Howe, but we don't quite know whether or not he's going to be fit this weekend. If he's fit, you'd swing more heavily towards Newcastle. Even without Alexander Isak, you'd expect Newcastle to win this game, and I think that's why we've all gone for them. And I think Newcastle will be playing Champions League football next season. The thing is, like, the Isak aspect in all of this, if Newcastle somehow don't win this game and Chelsea and Aston Villa or Nottingham Forest, two of that three, jump above them in the table, you'd wonder, is Isak's Newcastle future then in doubt? I don't think he leaves if Newcastle are playing Champions League football next season. I'm not sure he'll leave if they don't either, but I think it maybe makes the door ajar, let's say, for an exit for Alexander Isak. And obviously a lot of top clubs around Europe would love to have a player of his talents. So
I definitely lean towards more likely he goes if they don't make Champions League football or European football.
He is too good not to have played in two consecutive seasons as well.
Yeah.
It'd be one thing if it was their first year out of it, but two consecutive years without it. Now, the thing is, they won a trophy this year. Vibes are still good in Newcastle, I'm sure. But then again, a trophy winning season could be a good way to go out, a good note to go out on. But yeah, I think anyway, if they qualify for Champions League, which I expect they do, I don't think he's going anywhere. It's just going to be way too expensive to tempt him, nor would he want to leave. Right, Kathleen, good stuff.
Thank you very much.
That has been this week's Who You Got? Champions League Final tomorrow at 5 p.m. Premier League Sunday, 4 p.m. Don't miss it. Chat to you next week.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
On this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast, we had this.
Working with Johnny Wilkinson day in, day out, I learned essentially what kicking repetition looked like. We used to kick before breakfast, we'd kick after training, and we'd kick at night. And I can remember for the first 3 weeks, I couldn't even ring Jess because I wouldn't be able to stay awake after 9 p.m.
And we also had this.
Emma, would you ever consider doing a high rocks?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I was listening to one of your adverts there and you were talking about orthopedic help and I was like, that's all about me. I'm more interested in that than anything else.
Catch up now elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning when Off The Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.